And we are at 9/11. Good morning. It's John Williams. 2 degrees above zero. Is that what Steve Grzanich said is the wind chill factor right now? What is this, January? Current temperatures are 16, 17 degrees out there. So good morning. Here's another number that's kind of interesting to me today. The Dow is up 162. We're now past 29,000. 28-something is in the rearview mirror. We're at 29,197. The S&P, the NASDAQ, the numbers are moving up this morning, even though we were looking at a red screen. And a friend of mine said, you know, I am so interested in how well the economy is doing and the numbers are going up, up. And so if you have a pension or 401k, if you have some sort of mutual funds that are going to help you retire someday, those are all looking better. He said, I'm worried about the debt. The deficit is just under, or it might be over now, $1 trillion. The debt, the total debt that we owe is now over $23 trillion. Your share of that is $70,000. Oh, you've got kids? Their share is $70,000. I don't know if Daisy, my dizzy dappled dachshund, owes $70,000, but she ain't got it. I'll tell you that right now. She's not good for it. The interest that we will pay on the debt this year is $600 billion, which could go to a lot of roads and mental health. I talked to an economist today. I said, I don't know what $600 billion means. He said, put it this way, that could fix almost anything. You know, whatever it is that you wish you had money for, $600 billion would be the amount of money you wish you had for it. It's approaching our federal defense spending, what we pay every year in interest. Have you ever looked at your mortgage statement? If you're lucky enough to have one, don't. It'll break your heart. Brenda and I do that once in a while. We'll say, well, what do you know? We just wrote a check for $1,000 on our mortgage. 18 of them went to the actual house.
Yes.
The rest of them went to the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, jeez. So here's my question, though. So while the Dow and the numbers of the day are always good, nobody's looking back there saying, oh, what's up with that? So I asked an economist from Northwestern to come on and sort of ease my anxiety or put it in perspective. This is a conversation we've been meaning to have for a while, and today seems as good a day as any. He'll join us after the 10:30 WGN Radio News, closer to home. This idea that Chicago will ban plastics, everybody's been talking about it, and I will a little bit too. I think it is maybe surprising and upsetting to the restaurateurs, and they and you and I will have to eat the cost. No pun intended. This is a problem of their making. Portillo's, it's on you. Malnati's, it's on you. McDonald's, this is on you. We all love us some Portillo's, but when you get that bag, how much garbage is in that bag? And they don't seem to care. Maybe they care, but I don't feel it. I don't see it. I get way too much paper and plastic when I get takeout food. And I love that food! So we'll,
what about styrofoam?
Oh,
are
that's the stuff
that makes...
people
concerned about styrofoam?
Yeah, that's part of the deal. That's part of... So
is
you get those styrofoam containers if
the
you
foam?
Go to like a takeout place,
yeah,
or a,
the goodie,
yeah, a buffet. That's what you put your food in to take home, and that's, right, I think, what's on the chopping block here.
Well, you go to Portillo's. Yeah. They hand you a bag of foam take-home stuff, mm-hmm, and they ain't going to be able to do that. No, I don't even know what they're going to put it in. They're just going to hand you some salad? Just give, here's your burger. You want another fry? Hold on, I'll give you another fry.
Tupperware.
Yeah. One idea I saw is maybe you bring to, like, if you would go to like the food bar at Walgreens or
right,
Whole Foods,
sure,
you'd bring your own container, perhaps.
Well, maybe. Listen,
maybe
I think
that's where we're headed.
You know who does this? Europe.
Yep.
Canada. It's not like it can't be solved. We'll talk more about that later on. Our news click will be about this, too. By the way, we got this. So yesterday we did talk a little bit about that. Ray Kaplan came in from Kaplan Law. We're helping people with student loans, and if you're going to borrow money for your kids' college education, whose name should you borrow the money in and from whom? Always go with federal loans first, she said. Always do it in the kid's name. If you're going to do it as a parent, then do it as a parent. Plus, don't put it in both of your names. Always borrow the money in the name of the person with the least amount of income. That will pay enormous dividends when you have to start paying off the loan the way you borrow the money to begin with. And if you're completely in debt, what are your options? That's her business. What's the number? Financialrelief.com. Visit her website. But anyway, we talked about that yesterday. And Elizabeth Warren's plan, and maybe you like it too. Our news click asked you, do you like that idea? We'll just forgive your federal student debt. It'll be canceled. And 76% of you said, no, we need relief, but we can't afford it that way. 24% of you said, yes, thank you. We need that kind of debt relief. Just make it go away. Diane from Naperville emailed me yesterday the following. Your Majesty. So, of course, I'm going to read it on the radio.
Yeah.
In fact, that's all she said. Good night, everybody. She said, Your Majesty, I'm opposed to Warren's proposal for forgiving student loans. As one of Naperville's more frugal residents, I've been appalled, capital letters, at how many of my fellow parents do not consider the cost when allowing their kids to choose their college. The whims went out, and then families can't afford. They scramble to pay for the schools that their kids have picked. She talks about how she made value judgments for her kids, and they each graduated with $35,000 in debt, but it's something they can manage. Anyway, she said, during the debates, I found myself relating to Kristen Gillibrand's mentions to the cost of long-term care. She said, if you really want to focus on a topic that's important, we need to start thinking about the long-term care that you and I are going to need and that our parents need these days. Thank you, Diane. Both sobering and important subjects there. But this is the outrage of the day. My friend Eric Zorn at the Chicago Tribune, the columnist, sent me this. I don't know if our mincing rascals will talk about this or not. Ryan, are you ready to play the audio? So this is from WQAD-TV in the Quad Cities. And this is the latest thing for you to get your brain around the changing landscape we live in.
A special task force says that Illinois public schools should stop using some traditional terms that could make some schools and students feel excluded. Things like homecoming queen and prom king. That report is a recommendation to Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker. That report also suggested different ways that teachers can address groups of students who don't associate behaviors with a specific gender. Many of the suggestions reiterate state and federal law.
So the idea is that we no longer are going to have a prom queen and a prom king, homecoming queen and homecoming king. I'm not sure why, but that's the idea. A new report on inclusivity for students recommends Illinois public schools drop some of the traditional terms. The Affirming and Inclusive Schools Task Force released the report last week. It issued a series of recommendations, K through 12, aimed at removing language and titles that transgender, non-binary, and gender non-conforming students may find exclusionary. So if you are one of those individuals and there's a prom king, then to which would you be eligible or most suited? Would you be the prom queen or would you be the prom king? And since you don't seem to fit either of those, it's exclusionary to you, and therefore we should do away with the term. I'll pause while you put your car back on the roadway.
John?
Yes, Dave.
Northwestern a few years ago replaced their homecoming king and queen with a homecoming wildcat. With the idea of being less gender specific and being more inclusive.
Did they have to wear the costume?
I don't know about that theory.
No crowning ceremony.
So
then?
Just have one person, like a prom person.
They suggested in this report, we call it the prom royalty. And then you could elect a non-binary person, a male, a female, somebody who
One or two, though.
We could have dozens. I don't know. But I mean, at least we would. I think the point here, Mara, is we don't call them king or queen.
Yeah, why don't they just have a prom court?
You know,
say here, let's four people of any whatever and prom court.
And I think the boomers look back fondly or with, you know, mixed feelings about that because high school is a torturous time and maybe you didn't like the king or queen or you didn't get elected to be king or queen and you don't remember it so fondly. But I think the boomers generally look at this as a kind of nonsense. But I think our kids look at this and go, yeah, sure, we're already there. In fact, when you look at the prom kings and queens, you frequently see stories of somebody who didn't fit the traditional old mold of the prom king or queen. It's somebody with a disability, or it's somebody who's challenged in some way, or maybe it is somebody who's outwardly gay or non-binary, and the kids embrace it. They're not all bent out of shape about this, is the point I'm trying to make. I think that's the case. I'd be interested in what you think. 312-981-7200. You can text or call. 312-981-7200. This is the recommendation. They want all Illinois schools to do away with this. They want them to do away with best male and best female anything. I don't know if the yearbooks still have most popular boy, most popular girl, or, I don't know, boy.
Most likely to.
Most likely to, right. So if they do that, we have to stop doing that because, not because some of the boys are always excluded from the boy things. I mean, that to me is as big a deal as anything. Some girls will never be the prom queen and never, or never the girl with the prettiest smile or whatever. They, you know, they never make the list, and that handful of girls do. Maybe we should have done this a long time ago, just because that in itself is a little bit exclusionary. But I can just see some people sitting there at their coffee right now going, oh, Margaret, are you kidding me? This is ridiculous. And I think you get to have that feeling. You can come by that honestly. But I do think the tide is changing on this. Northwestern did that a while ago, huh?
Apparently they did. I've heard of this at other places, too. I mean, I don't think this is a brand new idea.
No.
But to do it legislatively, I guess, would be the new part.
Glenn wanted to say something. Hey, Glenn, you're on WGN. What's on your mind?
Hey, I'm just calling because of the fact that a lot of people forget that the term queen, which is for the king and queen, is considered a derogatory comment for those of who are homosexual, okay? Yeah. So using that term right there is considered derogatory. Mm-hmm. So taking that term out may, you know, change perception, but it is still considered a derog. We're making all these other changes for team names and races and creeds and orientations. We'll take that out also, and you know, you could see where people could see that as being a bad perception.
That's an interesting point. Thanks for the call, Glenn. You know, the word queer used to be neutral, then it was pejorative. Now kids or people embrace it. You'll hear them use that affectionately or descriptively and not maliciously. But you're right. This is just an example of, as I said a moment ago, the changing landscape. The vocabulary comes and goes, and I'm just telling you where it is right now. 9:39 now. Well, Illinois never seems to be the leader in anything, but here's something that we're way up there in. Robocalls per person. So we got that going for us. Your phone rings, your smartphone rings, and you don't know who that is, and it's garbage calls. What's going on, and what can be done about that? And I thought the president signed a piece of legislation to prevent this. I think previous administrations did this, so what the heck? In 10 minutes. Stay right there. By the way, some of the texters about should we change prom king and queen to something more inclusive for the transgender, non-binary, LGBTQ community. John, who the heck cares about high school popularity contests? Those things should be eliminated completely. They're useless. 773 said, I'm a boomer. I got no problem with these new suggestions. Get rid of king and queen. In fact, I like this better, said 773. And 801 said, John, if we don't learn how to navigate difficult situations in high school, life's only going to be harder as we get out into the real world. In the real world, I walked by the lobby of this building that we're in downtown. It's a lovely building. We got great views. And standing there in a corner table in the lobby, greeting people at 6-something this morning early was our supervisor of administrative sales, Maureen McDonald, and she's in the studio for a minute to tell us why she was sitting there. Hi, Maureen.
Hi,
how are you? Good morning.
Good morning. Your
bright and cheery face was welcoming people, and I knew what you were doing. And I said, oh, only Maureen. And like every office, every school, every unit has one person who's always going to volunteer, lead the team, just thanklessly organize stuff for some common good.
Stop.
And that
Stop.
Is always Maureen at our. We got a couple of those, but you are certainly one of them, Maureen. You work with the American Lung Association.
I do.
For us every year. Why is it so important to you?
I started getting involved with them actually through the radio station originally, but my dad had COPD and pulmonary fibrosis. He got diagnosed after I was already involved with the American Lung Association, and my aunt had COPD, or I'm sorry, my godmother had COPD and lung cancer.
So many, this is what I've come to learn through our association with the American Lung Association, is a lot of the lung illnesses are curable, but or specially treatable, but we don't catch them in time.
Right.
And if we were only either better able to diagnose it or find cures for some of these things, a lot of this would be prevented. But it's funny how hard it is
right.
to work on lung diseases.
Yes, and they do have a program now called Saved by the Scan that is catching lung cancers much earlier
really?
Than before. So it's something that people should be asking their doctors about.
March 8th is the big climb day, right?
Yes, it is.
What is this?
It's the Fight for Air Climb. It's at Presidential Towers, Sunday, March 8th. And people have the opportunity to climb 1, 2, 3, or all 4 towers.
How tall are these towers?
45 floors, 585 stairs each.
You didn't have to say that part. So where are these towers?
They're at Presidential Towers. They are just within walking distance of Union Station here
okay.
in Chicago.
So downtown.
Right.
And there's this series of tall presidential towers, they're called. They're
right.
each about 50 stories high. And you can walk up 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 of them.
Right.
You raise money in the process. You get
right.
pledges.
It's $100 minimum of fundraising to climb, which is very doable. I mean, you put something on Facebook and you've got $100 in a pretty short amount of time.
Typically. Or you could, I guess, buy into somebody's effort if you don't want to do that. You could sponsor
right.
somebody.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
People run up and down these, don't they?
They do. That's more the elite climbers, to be honest. There are people who go fast, but I would say a large majority of people are walking up the stairs.
Now, when Dave Ennett did it, the EMTs had to drag him out. Is that what happened?
No. Dave did a fantastic job.
How did you remember this?
This is, I think... What fifth year I'm doing it? Fifth
Probably,
or sixth
that
year,
sounds about right.
And it's great. It's a lot of fun. It's a really well run event.
Yes,
it's enjoyable. I was really nervous, John, the first time I did it.
I am
as
nervous
Maureen
about
will
the prospect.
Tell you.
It sounds like one of those things. You go, oh, that'll be fun. That'll be
right.
easy. I can go up a flight of stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Vandeveld and I walked together the first time, climbed together, and I kind of burned myself out at the beginning.
Oh.
And it became a struggle. Over the years, I've realized you have to pace yourself
right.
when you start out. But it's really very doable.
Are you jogging or are you walking?
Walking.
Yeah.
Climbing steps.
Yeah.
John,
yeah.
I know you can't relate, but it's kind of like having a baby. Because if you have a baby, you forget how painful it was.
I've heard that.
So that's why I've done this thing like 7 times, because I forget how painful it is
until
I do it again.
Huh?
But it's like, it's so worth it because it's so fun because we're all together and you
that's
know.
What I hear. All the pictures show
yeah.
just people having a blast and like
yep.
a fun run or walk. There's water stations. I guess
right.
you have people helping folks out along the way or at the
right.
bottom.
Yep. There's a couple of floors that they stop with water breaks. So you can pause. I call it the great equalizer because people who do marathons think that they are just going to go in and ace it. No problem whatsoever. And they find out that they're sucking wind
it's
like
different.
Everybody else. And then people who aren't in shape, they can just go slower and take more breaks and they can get through it too.
I think it might be interesting or fun to do it just for the physical challenge. See if
yeah.
you can do it.
I think you should.
I think you should.
I think
too.
You should join
yes,
us.
Yes, you
and
should, John.
You know
yeah.
what else, John?
Yeah.
There's like a beer at the end.
Oh,
yep.
hello.
Yeah, they usually
after
give
party.
You a free beer. Yeah.
Woo-hoo.
And John, you get a medal too.
A medal and beer?
Medal.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'll jump off those towers. That sounds great. Okay, March 8th, right?
Yep. Sunday, March 8th.
And if you want to sponsor somebody, contribute to our teams, or do it yourself, where do we go, Mo?
fightforairclimb.org/Chicago.
Do that again.
fightforairclimb.org/Chicago.
I'm WGN King John on social media, so I'll put that on my Facebook today, too.
Thanks,
Maureen.
And thank you.
Congratulations to Mary and Dave once again. Good job. I was reading in the USA Today today yesterday, and it said that Illinois is one of the leading states for getting robocalls. Go team! Up 22% across the country. The nation is now getting, 100 billion robocalls a year. The Trump administration has signed into law the Telephone Robocall Abuse Criminal Enforcement and Deterrence Act. TRACED is the acronym, which gives the FCC more time to take action against robocallers. They could be fined $10,000 a year. Alex Quilici is on a phone line. He is the CEO of a company called Umail. I got some questions for this guy about this. Hey, Alex, it's John. You're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
What's a robocall?
So a robocall is an automatically dialed call to your phone.
Does it mean that there's a human being there, or is it just a pre-recorded message?
depends. A lot of times what happens is a machine dials you, and if you pick up, then you get transferred to a person. In other cases, they just leave an automated message, an automated voicemail.
44%, according to the USA Today, tell me if you understand this to be true, of those calls generated by machines are scammers, people trying to rip me off.
That's right. USA Today actually got the statistics from us based on our estimates of what we see our user base experiencing. So you're absolutely right. It's nearly 50% of all the robocalls are scams or something bordering on a scam.
The one I get a lot is my warranty has expired on a car, on an appliance, maybe even on something I don't have, and I'm not interested in that. Is that a common experience?
That is. The number one scam right now is trying to convince you that you can get magically lowered interest rates on your credit card. And the obvious downside is they ask you for your credit card and then steal your identity. So you can, that's number one.
You can get lower interest rates on your credit card sometimes if you call your credit card company. I could see how people might think, oh, what do you know, Chase or Wells Fargo reached out to me and I'll talk to these people.
That's right. These robocallers are really clever, and they're very good at impersonating, you know, real entities, the banks, the Amazons, Apple, all sorts of folks. So imposter scams are really big.
I thought some time ago legislation was passed that limited these kinds of phone calls.
I think you're referring to the do not call list, where folks are not supposed to call your number without your consent. You can put your name on the or your number on the list. The way to look at those, though, are the do not call list is like a no trespassing sign in a high crime neighborhood. The burglars are just going to ignore it.
Really? I don't remember now if I did that, but do you suggest that I go on the do not call list if I haven't already?
It's a good thing to do because at least legitimate businesses will respect that. So you aren't going to get telemarketing calls from a credit card, you know, that you have no relationship with. But the bad guys, the scammers who are pretending to be the IRS or trying to get, you know, steal your credit card number, they could care less. They're just going to call as many people as possible and see who they can get on the line.
Is there anything in the display that will tell me anything about the legitimacy of the call when I look at my phone?
Depends. I mean, there are, for example, on landlines, Verizon will say potential scam or potential spam. There are services, I think T-Mobile will try to label calls, but that they're just trying to figure out, hey, maybe this is a problem. If you really want to address robocalls, you've got to get a robocall blocking app or service on your phone. We at UMail have one, there are others, but that's where the app can decide when to let your phone ring based on all the knowledge it has about the behavior of the phone numbers.
Will I miss a legitimate call if I sign up for a service like that?
It depends on the service. With our service, when we're not sure it's bad, we send it to voicemail without ringing, so at least you'll get the voicemail message. Mm. With other services, they behave differently. They all try to balance trying to get as many of these bad guys stopped versus the risk of maybe, you know, a prescription reminder not getting through.
Let's tell people how to do both things then. If I want to get on the do not call list, just to make sure, I understand how that's not perfect, but how do I do that?
So there's, I think it's donotcall.gov. If you just Google do not call list, you can go to that website. It takes a few minutes, add your phone numbers, and you're there. You're sure you're there.
What about your service, Alex? How do I do that?
So for a robocall blocking app like UMail, you simply go to the app store that's appropriate for your cell phone, whether it's iPhone or Android, search for UMail, Y-O-U-M-A-I-L, and download the app. Within a couple of minutes, you'll start seeing fewer robocalls.
Is it cost?
No, we couldn't stomach charging to block robocalls, so the robocall blocking service is free.
Now, how are you guys making any money?
So we have a lot of professionals who download the app because if you're a plumber, robocalls really affect your business. You're constantly picking up the phone and talking to scammers instead of customers. So we have a premium service that's really a smart auto attendant, you know, and you know, extra phone numbers that the plumbers can use. And we find a ton of people upgrade to that service, which pays the freight for everybody.
UMail, and then just search UMail on my app, on my phone at the App Store.
That's right. And then download the app and you should be off and running.
Good luck to you, Alex. Thanks for helping us out today.
All right. Thank you.
Alex Kalichi, 9:57. I hope that helps. We are following the Dow up 162, 29,000 in the rearview mirror, almost 29.2. The S&P is up. The NASDAQ is up. I mentioned this earlier, and I'll just bring it up now to remind you that we're going to maybe answer a question that's been nagging at you a little bit, too. It sure has been me, and that is as the Dow continues to tick up and up and up, and as interest rates are low, the jobs seem to be pretty good. We have all of these economic indicators that are pretty good. And this one little nit, though, that's sort of been picking on me lately has been that the deficit is $1 trillion. The debt is now $23 trillion. And if each of us just paid off our share, it would be $70,000, which I don't have. And I know my kids don't have it, and I'm not sure Brenda's got $70,000. Daisy is not good for her $70,000.
So that's a little nit? That's a little thing that's bothering you?
Okay, it's a large nit, but maybe it's just a nit. That is...
Look at the parade. Don't focus on the manure from the elephants.
Maybe I don't have to. Maybe that's fertilizer. My question for an economist, and this is what we're going to do in a half an hour, is... which is more important? If you had to pick one, would you put the Dow at 29.2? Or would you say, okay, make the Dow some much smaller number, make the markets less robust, but maybe we wouldn't have this ticking time bomb, because that's what I think it is. But I'm not really 100% sure. And by the way, not all economists are of one voice on this. But I have this feeling about climate and about debt that I'm going to be buried someday with a smile on my face, but I don't know that my kids or grandkids are. So what are we leaving them? That's the question. We'll answer that, or at least talk a little bit about that with someone who knows more than I do, which includes Daisy, the Dizzy Dapple Dachshund, in about 30 minutes. We were talking earlier about how the state of Illinois has a recommendation now, and it is to all of the public schools that there will no longer be prom kings and queens so as to accommodate the non-binary, transgender, LGBTQ kids, those who would never be eligible to be the prom king or queen because they don't identify traditionally male or female. So what's in it for them? And it's not just that. There's a whole host of gender-specific things in schools, and they want us to do away with those classifications or even the language. Don't even call it that. So we asked you what you thought about that. John, we were at the Northwestern homecoming last year. Northwestern got rid of that for these reasons a couple of years ago. Now, the homecoming court was introduced. It was mixed gender and race. It was people mostly wearing jeans and hoodies. As an alum, I missed the former pageantry. 773 said, I'm a boomer. My niece is a millennial. She went with a group of friends, not dates, to the prom. And they had a great time. It's a much better option. I think high school's an awkward time, and having popularity contests based on looks is old. It's time to change. Yeah, maybe that's true. Maybe we should have done this a long time ago, not just to accommodate kids whose identity is not so clear to them or you or me, but because some girls and boys never got picked. I know some of the boomers have been texting us saying, yeah, well, that's life, kids. Get ready for it. Not everybody's going to get a trophy. When Nancy Pelosi was signing some danged old document yesterday, and it was something to do with the impeachment. Was it the Articles of Impeachment?
It was the Articles, yeah.
So these are the famous Articles of Impeachment. Only three times has this been done.
They picked them up then and carried them to the Senate.
So before they did that, they had to be signed by the Speaker of the House. And this is my... second nit this morning, Steve. She used a multiple, she had a box of pens, mm-hmm. and she was signing a little bit and then put the pen aside, signed a little bit more, put the pen aside, so we would have all of these souvenir pins.
That you could buy them on eBay this morning.
pay down the deficit. So you could get one of the actual pens used to impeach Donald Trump. If this is so serious, and if they are so serious, then stop treating it like a photo op. Sign the thing and get it over there because it's important. And the people, the group of people standing behind Nancy Pelosi, you see this a lot of times. The presidents have always done this. They sign, the governors do it. And then everybody gets one of the pens and they'll sign multiple copies, or they'll take their signature and break it into multiple pieces. And then everybody gets one of the official pens. And I understand that if it's something that's giving money to the kids,
okay,
or a proclamation, but
let's do the health care bill that Obama signed. right? So when he signed that, he was surrounded by members of Congress. Well, typically, you're surrounded by members of Congress or the legislature who helped push it through,
yeah.
And you give them a souvenir pen
okay.
to say, you know, I was part of this signature law.
This was used to sign that famous law.
Right. Now, but declaring war or past signing articles of impeachment or things like that seems to be a time to put that tradition aside.
Thank you very much. Right. I mean, to me,
let's see what it looks like.
It's the equivalent of that. It's if we were signing a declaration of war against Iran or China or Kentucky, you wouldn't say, hey, you want one of these pens? Hey, here's one of these pens.
Right.
Come on.
No, I agree. But I was wondering, I was watching her do it, and I was wondering what the signature looks like. She must be used to doing it.
What her signature looks like, or what the multi-part signature looks
like? Yeah, she's signing each, doing a letter, a pen, and she's apparently doing it in cursive, not, you know,
right.
handwriting. I just wonder how it came out.
Right, because I'm doing it right now with my name.
I know she's had more practice.
It doesn't look right. It doesn't look right.
No, I agree with you, though. I thought that was not fitting for the moment.
You know how yesterday we talked about this new nightly national newscast that WGN America is going to do from the studios of Channel 9 this summer? They're going to launch a 3-hour nightly national newscast. I'm still not sure who's going to anchor that, because they don't know. But I do like the idea of Shep Smith doing that, the guy that left Fox News, in part because he didn't agree with everything they were doing. I don't know who our Walter Cronkite is, but that's what they're looking for, the person that would be this neutral voice. Somebody said Bill Curtis. I don't know if he wants to get back in that game, but maybe it'll be a new invention. Maybe it'll be somebody we don't know, but we'll come across credibly and fairly, and we'll have very careful writers. I'm watching CNN this morning, and the story that they're spending a lot of time on, they've got Nancy Pelosi on there right now, but one of the stories that since the debate last night, they have been, or 2 nights ago, right? Transfixed with is Elizabeth Warren accusing Bernie Sanders of calling her a liar.
On national TV.
I am not impressed with that news coverage. Maybe he did, maybe she didn't, maybe, I don't know what their personal private conversations were like. I don't even care if you have video of one of them saying something that contradicts what they say they said. That is so trivial compared to all of the things that we should be judging them on, whether or not he said something she doesn't like.
Well,
I think I think the coverage on that has been ridiculous.
I disagree. I'm not fascinated by it, but I think I'd love seeing what we saw. There are two candidates for president in an unguarded moment, and you almost never see that. So I think there's value there. It is a real thing if these two are both fighting over the progressive wing of the party, and if one of them thinks a woman could never win, that's not an insignificant thing.
Okay, but and CNN, it seemed like, completely bought into that's Bernie's position. And in his defense, he said, look, Hillary Clinton got more votes than Donald Trump. It's preposterous to suggest otherwise. So I don't know what he told Elizabeth Warren, but I'll bet he knows a woman can be president. One about was.
So then, we don't know who. I mean, I'm wondering how the story came about.
And did he say it to her? And
yeah, it was a meeting they had.
Okay, but then what about that? I'm more interested in what he says to 300 million people. I don't know why I'm yelling at you, Steve.
Well, that's not me, because when he's speaking to 300 million people, he's being very guarded and polished and being filtered. And when he's speaking to one person behind closed doors, I'm thinking it's more likely that he's being to his true self.
Well, I'm less interested in his true self,
than
to be honest with you.
Phony campaign rhetoric?
That's not the way I'd put it, but yeah, something like that. The Gerald Auto Group, every year, does a thing with the Blackhawks where they donate money per goal scored. There's lots of reasons to root for the Blackhawks, but that's one of them right there. Doug Gerald is in our studio this morning. Doug, welcome to the show. How are you?
Great. Good morning, John.
How much do you guys give to the charity of your choice each year?
Well, it's been between $25,000 and $31,000 a year. So this year we've got about $14,100 for Hesed House, and hoping the Blackhawks ring that tally up high.
$100 per goal scored, right?
That's right.
So are you? So that's coming out of your company's pockets. You're okay with this, right? You're rooting for big scores. You want us to win 7-1, something like that?
Oh, yeah.
I know the guy sitting next to you does, because he is the recipient of some of that this year. So welcome also into the studio, Ryan Dowd from Hesed House. Hi, Ryan. How are you?
Good morning. Great.
What's Hesed House?
So we're a second largest homeless shelter in Illinois, but we're a lot more than just a homeless shelter. We've got everything it takes to help get a person back on their feet again. Obviously, shelter and food, but also job training, mental health counseling, substance use counseling, legal services, medical services, anything it takes to get a person back on their feet.
Where are you guys located?
Aurora.
And how many people come through your facility?
250 to 300 a night.
Really? Yeah. How many people will you serve in a year then?
A little over 1,000.
So people stay there how long?
About half the people we serve stay with us 2 weeks or less. So half the people are out pretty quickly. Another 42% are out within 1 year, and 8% is going to be with us longer than a year.
If somebody's there for 2 weeks, where were they before and where did they go after?
Oftentimes that 2 weeks group, they had some sort of economic crisis, a job loss, a big medical bill, but their fundamentals, if you will, are okay. There's not a significant mental health issue or substance abuse issue that they have to work through. They had some sort of economic crisis. We can help them kind of provide food and shelter until they can get back on their feet again pretty quickly.
Isn't that amazing to think there are people, I know this sounds naive, but I have a comfortable world, and nobody I know is one paycheck away from having to knock on your door. A lot of people are, huh?
Yeah, we get 16 new individuals every single week showing up at our door.
They must be embarrassed. They must be angry.
Embarrassed, terrified, angry, overwhelmed, kind of all of the above.
How many of them are homeless people, though? People who, for a variety of reasons, are living on the street?
So 100% of the people we serve are homeless. So every single person that comes to us, they have nowhere to stay.
I'm speaking of the chronic people.
Yeah, so that chronic is going to be that last 8% that's with us a year or longer.
Yeah, and then what do you do with them during the day? Are you counseling them? Are you teaching them? What do you do?
That's when all the services happen. Yeah, the job training, the mental health counseling, substance use counseling, legal, medical, all those things that help a person rebuild their life.
Boy, thank God for you guys. Gerald Auto Group gives you... How much money are we going to hand over to them this year?
Hopefully close to $30,000, but yeah. The Blackhawks need to pick it up a little bit.
Yes, yeah. Please.
My organization has supported Ryan ever since I met him about 8 or 9 years ago.
Why do you pick them?
Well, what he started to explain was the comprehensive approach to rehabilitating a human's life. And it's not just putting a roof over their head and feeding them while they figure it out. They've got, you know, truly on-site mental health counselors. They've got legal counsel. They've got everything that you or I would ever need in our life, including, you know, healthcare stuff and path to good medical advice. And it's the type of care that, you know, his goal is that every time they ring the bell and somebody leaves, which is a tradition that they have, that individual never needs to come back.
Oh, really? They walk out the door and you celebrate their departure, huh?
We have a gong, a big old gong, and we call it the gong gong. And when an individual leaves, they can come out, we'll take it out in the parking lot and let them bang it and let the world know that we just ended homelessness for somebody today.
Can you tell me a story about somebody who's had the gong ring and what happened in a positive way to their life afterwards?
Sure. We've got families that, you know, they ring the gong, they go off, they stabilize their lives. And then when it's really cool is when they come back and volunteer. They say, hey, you guys helped me. I want to give back. And so we've got individuals that serve food and provide mentorship who've been there. They know what it's like. And they want to help others get back on their
feet. Is it families or individuals?
All the above. Yeah, we serve everybody. So right now we've got maybe 60, 70 kids under our care, and then and a whole lot of...
What happens to the kids during the day?
School. Yeah. They got to go to school.
So mom and dad, are they all living in a unit together, or do you segregate them by age or gender?
So unfortunately, we have a congregate family shelter, so it's kind of all the families in one place, but they are separate from the single adults, which is kind of healthy for everybody. But it's a shelter, so it's a big room with a whole lot of people.
I would imagine it's kind of scary for some people, too, because if there's... I'm conjuring up in my head the image of some guy who is on the street, he's disheveled, maybe he's an addict of some description, and he's hanging around the kids, and I'm just... That terrifies me. How true is that scenario? What do you do to safeguard those people?
So we have two shelters. We have one for single adults. We've got one for families. They're not... They're physically in the same building, but they're on different ends of the building, so it's just really not an issue.
Yeah. And then how do you help those people? I would imagine that's a different kind of challenge, huh?
Yeah, so someone who's chronically homeless, who's been homeless for a while with severe mental health issues or substance abuse issues, that takes a lot more work and a lot more time. And oftentimes it takes a thing called permanent supportive housing, which is the idea that you take someone who's been homeless a long time, you put them in an apartment, you send a case manager out to the apartment to help them stabilize and stay there. And you actually, that's the goal, that's the end result. And it sounds so un-American not to help somebody kind of pull themselves up by their bootstraps. But when you're dealing with profound mental health issues, paranoid, schizophrenia, et cetera, the end goal oftentimes is just stability, and that stability actually saves society a fortune, because someone who's homeless and profoundly mentally ill, huge costs to healthcare, huge costs to legal system, et cetera. And that same person housed, they don't go to the emergency room very often. They don't go to the they don't have run-ins with police very often. And we actually there's a net savings to society. And so it's with that population, it's actually cheaper to solve homelessness than manage it.
Not to mention the quality of life improvement for the individual.
Absolutely. Right? Everybody wins. It's one of those few interventions where everybody wins and it's cheaper.
That's a good point, isn't it, Doug? I mean, you think of some of these people in either group he's described, their day-to-day existence must just be so challenged. Your place, their place must be an oasis for these folks, huh?
And talk about self-esteem. I mean, who are any of us without our own pride and dignity? And think about the difference between an individual's life and self-concept with Ryan's help and without it.
Especially with kids. You know, you want to be that role for your kids. You want to provide for your kids. They want to look up to you as somebody who can be independent. And if they come through your doors, it's hopefully a brief transition. But just imagine how challenging it is. Doug Gerald is the owner of Gerald Auto Group. And Ryan Dowd is the executive director of Hesed House. It's in Aurora. What's your budget for a year? Is that a number you know off the top of your head and you can share with me?
It's about $5
million. Wow. Second largest shelter in Illinois, or the largest outside of Chicago? Is
both.
That it? Yeah, no kidding. And what does the Gerald Auto Group specialize in? What kind of vehicles you got on the lot over there?
Oh, well, we have a bunch now. We have Hyundai, Kia, Nissan, Subaru, Ford. And this month, we're celebrating the addition of Toyota and Honda to our lineup.
It's funny. A friend of mine just sent me a picture of a Hyundai this morning. And do you know why she sent me a picture of a Hyundai? Not just because it's a fantastic automobile and everybody should own one. In fact, let me see if your tag is on the plate here. I can't make it out, but I'll just show it to you guys. The vanity plate on this Hyundai is WGN 720. I don't know who that is. I don't know who you are, WGN 720, but wow, thank you. I hope they still listen and like us because, you know, sometimes you change stations, but the plate is still there. WGN 720, we should have that. One of us should.
I agree.
This belongs on the Bob Surratt mobile, and it's a handsome Hyundai. Fellas, thanks for coming in. Continued success to Gerald. Everybody go buy a couple of cars over there today, and then they'll have more money to give to the through the Blackhawks goal scored to Hesed House in Aurora. Doug Gerald, thanks for coming in. It's nice to meet you in person.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having us.
Ryan, keep up the good work. Anything else we can do for you guys other than, you know, cheer on the Blackhawks?
Definitely. That's the first step. Cheer on the Blackhawks. And obviously, if somebody wants to donate or look more into us, we're hesedhouse.org.
H-E-S-E-D.
Correct.
Hesedhouse.org. Gentlemen, congrats. Thanks for coming into the studio.
Thank you.
It's 1027. This is WGN. So we've been following that impeachment story. A lot of local news on Steve Bertrand's desk. He'll get to all of that in just a minute. And then finally, let's just get somebody in here to answer this question. The markets are up. Interest rates are low. Everybody seems to have a job. It might not pay a lot, but everybody seems to have a job these days. The debt and the deficit have never been higher. How do we reconcile those two? What's your obligation? That's coming up. I used to be fascinated by vanity plates, Steve.
Yeah, I was just thinking of those this week.
I still am a little bit. Why were you thinking about them?
Because I don't think people do them anymore, do they?
Not as much. I think we have other means of expression.
Right.
You know, social media and stuff.
It's funny. I was on the road and I saw, I think, a vanity plate and I'm like, that doesn't quite hold the sort of same interest for people that it used to.
I do have my all-time favorite vanity plate.
What's that?
It was a couple of cars. They were parked side by side in a garage. One was, I like you like you are.
I like you like you are?
I like you like you are was the sentence I said to myself, but the vanity plate was I-Y-Q-Y-Q-R. And the next vanity plate next to it was, I like you are too.
Really?
Isn't that sweet? But now somebody out there has WGN 720. Is it one of our employees? A friend of mine, Nancy Butel, was out near Naperville, and she saw in the car in front of her, she took a picture of it and sent it to me. I'm like, who is that person?
I've seen a couple of those around with WGN, and way back in the 80s, I almost did that, and then they came through with a round of layoffs. Like, and I realized...
Well, that's what it is. I'm thinking it could be a former employee.
Yeah, what a horrible thing to remind her.
Well, you know? I know, that's the thing. I mean, be careful when you get a vanity plate because, well, some of you want to keep them forever, you know, go Cubs or something. At least you're going to be stuck with it for a year and maybe you won't love her anymore or them or be employed by it.
I mean, imagine if you said Boeing CEO.
Exactly. I have often you know, I felt like I would never be so braggadocious, like, right. you know, iDoc or Money Me, or, you know, some people are bragging about their success or their golf score or hole in one. And I'm like, but then again, I do a radio show, so I am in no position to judge other people's vanity because that's my career.
Yours would say, yes, it's me.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's the guy.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't think he'd look like that either.
All were wondering.
Yeah, my husband's is Wisconsin related, and he has an Illinois plate.
That's funny.
You're going to get yourself injured.
Is it like a Go Red or something like that?
I won't say what it is, yeah. But it's kind of like a Cheesehead related.
God. Oh, a Packer fan plate. Huh?
Sort of. Or
just cheese,
well,
yeah.
Kind of. But it's just, it's weird because, you know, he's got an Illinois plate.
So speaking of Wisconsin, Viking Cruise Line is building, this is a headline in the Tribune today, two cutting edge ships. Viking, the people that you see do those river cruises through Europe. And one of their new ships is headed for the Great Lakes. It's going to not set sail until 2021 or 22. Viking Octantis is set for its maiden voyage January of 2022. So it's down the road. It'll hold 378 guests, 189 staterooms. So this is a small cruise ship. It's bigger than one of those river boats. It's 600 feet long, so a couple football fields long. The vessels are designed to be small and nimble enough to navigate remote polar areas and the St. Lawrence River, big enough to handle the potentially rough waters in the Arctic Circle and Antarctic Circles, because they will be up and down there as well. The cruise line's initial Great Lakes offerings do not include Chicago as a port of call. A lot of them do go to Milwaukee, though. So they start sailing in 2022, and the cheapest for any of these trips of 7 to 14 nights is $6,000 a person.
Holy cow.
I know, listen to you. And they start as high as $9,000 a person. And it doesn't say here in the description that they're all inclusive. So I'm a little surprised by that price point. The other thing, like, I like this idea and I like cruising. And it would be nice to stay in the United States, same time zone, same currency. You don't have to take a long jet flight somewhere. But where do you go?
Well, and
you're not in these great cities of the world. I mean, I love America, but like when you do those Mississippi River cruises, you're in the Quad Cities and then you wave to Quincy or wherever, but it's...
Well, you've done a Mississippi River cruise, right?
An overnight one from the Quad Cities up to Galena and then back. And that, for a day and a half, that was fun.
Right, but I know people who've done two-week cruises on the Mississippi.
Yeah, well, maybe that's their cup of tea, but when I compare it to some of the... So, obviously, I have a vested interest in this. I'm leading a group on a cruise in October, and I just got an email the other day from Nancy Kelly. They have 6 suites left for our group on our ship. We are going to go in October from Istanbul and Ephesus and Santorini, the Greek Isles, through Dubrovnik and Kotor, the Croatian coast. I don't even know what I just said. And we're going to spend 2 nights in Venice. Those trips are all inclusive. And they're fantastic. And those are just a little more expensive than these.
So you would see St. Mark's in Venice, but here you would see the Pfizer Auditorium in Milwaukee.
That's the thing. Here's the thing. If you said, and it spends 2 nights in Chicago, I think, yeah, let's go. I mean, what do I care? I'm working here. But I think if you were trying to market it, you would have to come through Chicago. They don't yet. I don't understand that. So anyway, my trip is kellycruises.com in October. Now, Dave is also doing a trip, and his trip is going to be...
Scotland.
You're going to Scotland.
Going to Scotland Highlands and
in
history.
June 8th,
we're leaving through Steve Bertrand Travel, and it's a 10-day trip. I've never been to Scotland.
It's just like you imagine.
It's got to be.
It's so old.
Right?
And you think the architecture in Chicago is amazing? The architecture in Edinburgh is stunning.
The Royal Mile? Beautiful.
Yes, absolutely. And it's like they built a Harry Potter world for you when you're in Edinburgh. Really, it is. It's fascinating.
We're going to, we'll see St. Andrews.
The golf course.
Of course.
That's not a draw for me, but I guess that is for a lot of people.
Well, I'm sorry, David. I didn't know you were going to even do this, but I'm chiming in. But when you see it, it's chilling because you see it so often on TV,
yeah.
And you see the approach on 18.
You're talking about Dave Ennett or the golf course?
Dave Ennett in a kilt at St. Andrews.
Yes. I'm looking forward to that. We're going to a distillery. Looking forward to that.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things on the itinerary is a working sheepdog demonstration.
Yeah, I've been meaning to do that.
I think that would be really cool.
A working sheepdog demonstration.
Yes.
Oh, so he rounds up a sheep and brings him back.
Yeah.
That would be kind of fun.
Wouldn't that be neat?
Out there in the highlands.
But a bunch of castles will be on Loch Ness.
Yeah.
So, again, it's starting on June the 8th. We depart for 10 days. And this will be my third trip with Steve Bertrand Travel. And the first two could not have been better.
Do you talk to the people on the trips?
Of course I do.
Everybody gets a token. When you talk to Dave, you hand him the token.
That's not how it works.
Your token, can't talk
John,
to Dave.
John, we're all together. You've done it. We're all together. We'll hang out and have a great time in Scotland.
Okay, so you guys, and since you've all done these, and John, speak to this, I'm saying your trips too, but you're going to come home with new friends, and it's just the sort of thing that you build a community for life. That's the coolest part of it for me.
I sent a text this morning at 6:30 to a woman named Sue Cox. I said, Sue, I'm going to talk about a subject near and dear to your husband Ron's heart in actually about 5 minutes, the federal debt. And I met Sue on one of our trips. You know, I mean, we're pals. And I could say that about 10, 15 people.
Yeah, same here.
And a lot of people you won't see again, but they're lovely company. Mm-hmm. And here's the nicest thing. This sounds so cliche, but it's true. You're almost like a grandparent or a father. You know, you see these, oh, look, those kids are doing, they're getting along, they're making new friends. You're so happy for your fellow travelers.
Right, right. And well, it helps that my wife is on the trip because take to Karen and love hanging out with her, and then I happen to be along.
How about you, Steve? Do people take to you very readily, or you?
Oh, it's all about Sharon. Sharon's putting together books of all the trips we've done with different people.
I gotta do that,
and she's loving that. But yeah, it's a cool time. And in Edinburgh, you're staying in the Grass Market area, which I think, John, you've been to.
Yeah,
it's right off the Royal Mile. Really cool restaurants and things like that.
Okay, so let's just summarize it this way. And it came to mind because I'm looking at this Viking cruise line, and they're going to, in 2022, sail the Great Lakes. You can go Ontario and Quebec and Milwaukee and all around here. And I think there's great advantages to that, but it's also, you know, I guess pick your cup of tea, whichever you like, go on that one. Those start in 2022. They do not include Chicago yet. They are $5,000 to $8,000 a person, $6,000 to $8,000 a person. Dave's trip is in June. It's to Scotland, SteveBertrandTravel.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then my trip is in October. If you want to come along with Brenda and me, that will be via Kelly Cruises at KellyCruises.com. We will be in Ephesus, my favorite place in the world, on an all-inclusive trip that ends up in Venice for a couple of nights.
I can't wait to hear what you think of Croatia.
I that's what everybody says, and I haven't been on that one. That was really appealing to us to try Dubrovnik and the whole Croatia area. I'm less enthusiastic about Venice than some of the stops, but I think we ought to get there while it's still above water, and I do want to see it, so I'm kind of fascinated as well. But there are times where on the cruise ship, I don't even want to get off. I mean, sometimes you just kind of hang out on the ship and just relax for a day, which you can do as well. So KellyCruises.com, SteveBertrandTravel.com, and wait your turn for those Viking trips. It's 10:43 on WGN. By the way, a little later on, we'll visit with Jennifer Walling. She is the executive director of the Illinois Environmental Council after 11 o'clock. The question I don't have is, the answer to off the top of my head is, if Chicago is going to tell all the restaurants that you cannot serve food in foam food containers, you're getting our guest, right? He's going to join us in just a second. And if they can't use plastic knives, forks, or spoons, not even the wonderful spork, then what are we going to use? They will have to offer plastic straws or utensils on request. So if you ask them, they can give it, but it will not automatically be in there. And it sounds like the foam food containers will be gone completely. Is this a good idea or a bad idea? Do you care if it's going to add to your meal? I'm not a restaurant owner, can you tell? I think this is a problem of Portillo's own creation, so I don't have a lot of sympathy for the restaurants. But we'll get to that in a little bit. First on the phone line is Ben Harris, the executive director of the Public-Private Interface at Northwestern University. This guy was Joe Biden's chief economist. He's an economist at Northwestern. Thanks for joining us today, Ben. How are you? Good morning.
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
I got a couple of quick observations for you. I want your comment on them. The Dow is over 29,000 again today. We're up 150 to 200 points right now. We're at 29.1 or 29.2. Can you imagine? But the deficit is just about $1 trillion for this year. We're going to spend $1 trillion more than we have. And the debt is now, the accumulation of our debt is now $23 trillion. My share is $70,000, and your share is about $70,000, a little under that. The interest we're paying on the debt is $600 billion a year. And that doesn't even begin to attack the principal. So what's your headline on all of that, Ben? What should I know or think about?
I think it's helpful to think about how much our debt has grown over the past 20 years. You know, we can go back to 2000. Debt is a share of the economy, so the accumulated debt was a fraction of what it is today. Our deficits were much smaller. If we look at the Obama administration, for example, when Obama came into office, deficits were around 10% of GDP. President Obama got it down to around 2.5%. But then something happened, which is that economists, by and large, stopped worrying about the size of deficits. We have a Trump administration which passed a big tax cut in 2017, and by its own policies, we can tell, doesn't worry a lot about deficits. And now we're in a situation where we raise about 16% of GDP in revenues, but spend about 21% of GDP. So even though the economy is humming along, there are plenty of jobs for everyone, we have this structural mismatch where we're just not bringing in enough revenue to pay for what we're spending. And this is going to continue until we choose to do something different.
What was the percent you said? 21% of GDP, that is our gross domestic production. Here's how much we make, and we're spending 21% of that on the service of the debt. Did I hear you correctly?
No. So we bring in, at the federal level, we bring in around 16% of our economy in taxes, and we spend about 21%. And so the difference is about 5% of GDP, and that's the deficit every single year.
I wonder how that relates to my household. I mean, I guess that would mean literally we would just have an accumulating balance on our credit card, correct?
Yeah, and so a lot of times people try to take federal budgeting and put it in terms of their own finances. It's a little different because the federal government can tax and households can't, but it's a good question to ask, what does this mean for me? There's a chance that what it means is nothing at all. There's a chance that we'll just keep running up deficits. We have really low interest rates. And maybe we're okay just running deficits for forever, and we'll still be able to spend money on all the things we want to spend money on. That's not my view. I think if we do this for too long, after too many decades of running up deficit after deficit, eventually markets are going to say, look, we're going to come calling for the money you're spending, and we're not going to keep lending you money at such cheap rates. Interest rates will go up, which means not only fewer dollars at the federal level to pay for things like education and infrastructure, but also means that the interest rates that I pay as a consumer are going to go up. It's going to cost more to buy a house. It's going to cost more to take out a mortgage,
right.
More to take out a student loan. So I worry about sticking with this mismatch between revenues and spending for too long.
It bothers me maybe most because it just seems so irresponsible, right? If it doesn't affect me today, and hopefully it won't affect my kids, although I think that's a fool's bargain, but it just still seems to be irresponsible. But it also feels like this. There's a monster in this closet. Let's not open the door, and then the monster doesn't get out. If I have a massive balance on my credit card, but I can afford the minimum interest payment every month, what do I care about the balance? I'll just keep paying that minimum interest payment, and I don't even care if it accrues to a zillion. All I know is I only had to write a check out for this much this month. And that's really what we're doing at a federal level, right?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. You know, if you go back to 2009, we think about the recession. One of the ways we got out of the recession, one of the principal ways we got out of the recession was by spending $1 trillion in stimulus. I truly believe that. one of the reasons we could spend $1 trillion without disrupting markets is because we had moderate debt. But what happens if we're at debt that's 150% of our GDP and markets don't want to lend anymore and we find ourselves in another recession and we need to borrow $1 or $2 trillion to get ourselves out of it? So just like that household that's paying the minimum balance month after month, that household might have someone get sick and you need to go and spend a lot of money to get yourself right again. Well, and then, in the country, I worry we're going to run out of room.
Then why don't the politicians talk about this?
Well, there's not a lot of appetite for fiscal responsibility. You know, President Trump during the 2016 election, and you know, I'm affiliated with the Democratic Party, so take that with a grain of salt, but in the 2016 election, Hillary Clinton's campaign more or less paid for every one of their spending initiatives. And President Trump had had a $7.2 trillion tax cut that he ran on that he paid for with about $30 billion in offsets. So he paid for less than 1% of it, and voters didn't seem to mind at all. They still went ahead and elected him president.
Right, but the theory behind that, too, is that that will generate more revenue in the long run. I mean, it's not wildly irresponsible if it works. That is a strategy, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's when tax cuts pay for themselves. I think that's been pretty widely discredited by economists. The thinking now is not that tax cuts pay for themselves. It's just that deficits don't matter. And that gives you license to spend as much as you like. But that's sort of a wonderful world to be in until it matters.
That's amazing to me. Deficits don't matter. I mean, maybe they don't. You know, you've heard of Paul Krugman. I've got an article from him, and he calls it this doomsday double standard. He said that the media and the Democrats are very hawkish on deficits, if you can imagine that, because they just don't understand. They see this thing as bad and troubling, and they don't understand the value of low interest rates. They just don't get it.
Yeah, and a lot of what's driving that thinking is what has happened over the past 20 years. So if we go back to 2000, we thought that over the next 10 years, this is our thinking in 2000, we thought that over the next 10 years that our debt to GDP will go close to zero, so we'll pay off almost all our debt, but interest rates will go up. And the exact opposite has happened. Our debt has soared for a host of different reasons, and interest rates have gone close to zero. And economists have sort of observed this and said, yeah, there doesn't seem to be a connection between debt and deficits, which has been true over the past 20 years, but that doesn't mean it's going to hold forever. You know, it's really interesting, too, if I can make one more point, which is if you look at what our trading partners are doing, if you look at the fiscal policy of other developed countries, they're doing the exact opposite. So over the past 20 years, the amount of money we're bringing in has gone down as a share of the economy by about 4 percentage points. All our trading partners are doing the opposite thing, where they're bringing in more revenue than they did 2 decades ago. So we're going to find out really fast who has the right approach. And like I've said, I think that we're probably going to be on the wrong side of this.
Well, let me just go back to one last point here. The interest we're paying on the debt. Anybody that's ever borrowed money knows how that works. If you got a car, you probably borrowed money and you pay interest on that loan. A $20,000 car costs you about $30,000. The interest we pay on the debt is $600 billion a year. I told you before the show, I don't know what $600 billion is, but that sounds like a lot of money to me. And do I understand this? Do I have this down, Ben, that's $600 billion that we've paid on that debt that we could have paid on the roads or mental health or schools or the Air Force or anything else, right?
I mean, let's just put this in context. The amount of money we pay on the debt today is big enough to solve pretty much any problem in our country. It's enough to send everyone to school, to college for free. It's enough to revamp our infrastructure. It's enough to shore up our retirement savings shortfall. So it's an enormous amount of money. And every dollar we spend in interest payments means it's a dollar not going to something else. So, you know, as we continue to accumulate this debt, it means a lot less spending for everything else that's important to us.
What do you make of Elizabeth Warren's idea to just wipe the trillion-plus dollars of student debt out?
Look, I mean, student debt is a concern, but I think that I'm not a big fan of that particular proposal, in large part because we don't worry too much about the Harvard graduate coming out with $60,000, $70,000 in debt who goes into finance. That person will be able to pay off their debts just fine. What we worry about is the kid trying to go to community college or deciding whether or not to go to a public four-year degree and say, is this too expensive? Just wiping out debt, I think, is both unfair to other people who have paid their debt, and I think it's just too broad and not targeted enough towards the real problem.
Okay, I'm going to vote for you for president. How about that?
You know, I'm still an advisor to Joe Biden, so if you vote for him, I'll be happy.
It's nice to talk to you, Ben Harris. I appreciate you joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
He is the executive director of the Public-Private Interface at Northwestern University. He's one of Joe Biden's guys. That's not why I called him, but I like some of the things he said. It's 10:56. The news, the daily web poll question at WGNradio.com. And on the John Williams Facebook page, I'm WGN King John on social media, asked, should student loan debt be canceled? Should we just wipe it out? And 76% of you said no, but wow, 24% of you said yes. I'm a little surprised by that number, too. I watched Joker last night. Ha! Finally saw the Joker movie on TV last night, which I don't think I lost a lot. I watched it with my wife, Brenda, Daisy, our dizzy dappled dachshund, and our son, Griffin.
Who was scaredest?
It is not as scary or violent as you think.
Funny, because someone just yesterday said it's a great movie, but it's very violent.
Well, a guy does get his head bashed into the wall.
Okay.
And he kills somebody with a knife. I hope I didn't give anything away. But it's, I don't know, what did you, I guess it depends on what your expectations were. To me, you have this insane sociopathic killer who's the guy that fights Batman and has all of those crazy tools and toys. And when you watch the trailers, you just see this completely unhinged guy. And I was just expecting, a sort of Coen Brothers or some sort of craziness, some sort of violent, crazy movie. And what you get is a movie about one man's falling into complete and utter unhinged madness. He is not a mentally well person. At the beginning of the movie, a couple of things tip him over the edge, and then he becomes homicidal. That sounds like an interesting movie or a boring movie or what to you, but that's this. In fact, when we got done, Griff said he was a little surprised how thin the narrative arc was. There's not a lot that happens in the movie.
Griffin hadn't seen it?
He had not.
Wow.
I know. Griff's like the movie man, but he was a little like maybe you or me. Yeah, I know it's out there. I got to see it, but I just don't want to go see that thing. I thought it was terrific. On my scale of 1 to 23 Jujubes, I'm giving it a 20.
Well, on your advice, I started watching Unbelievable last night.
Yeah, the story about a couple of cops that investigate a rape
serial
story.
Rapist.
Yeah.
And you said the first episode, and others said was very
hard to get through.
So I'm like, why would I want to watch this? And it wasn't as bad as I was expecting.
Oh, good.
Because I think you scared me out of it a little bit.
First episode and a half of the serial series, Unbelievable, are tough. It is, and that it is based on a true story is remarkable. And the acting is pretty good, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I'm 1.5 in.
That's weird, because I wouldn't say after an episode and a half of that I was enjoying it.
Well, I'm just happy to find a show again.
Well, that's it. And boy, once you get into Unbelievable, you can't stop watching it. It's just like, click, let's go again. I got another hour. Let's go. Boom. What is that stream on? Is that Netflix? Did you watch that or HBO?
It's Netflix.
Netflix.
It's not HBO. I'm pretty sure it's Netflix.
Netflix. Unbelievable. Well, so Brenda was not as enthusiastic about Joker as I was. Griffin was probably somewhere in between. I'm just kind of curious where you are. Text to 312-981-7200. On a scale of 1 to 23 Jujubes, what do you give the Joker? Is it Joker or The Joker? What do you give that movie? I thought the performance, by the way, by Joaquin Phoenix was unbelievable. I mean, that's the other thing. When you see the trailers for this movie or the posters, any promotional thing about it, even when he does talk shows, you go, all right, this is an actor's movie. And I don't know, do I want to spend a lot of time with that guy, that creature? So there's that. I'll give you that. But I just think it's such a terrific performance that I was sort of captivated by it. There's a couple of things that you have to just go along with the movie because they're a little preposterous, but that's okay. I just thought his performance was really good. And by the way, at the very end, this is where I get my film critic son nervous. I think the last 20 minutes of the movie are the best. I think that's where the stuff really happens. And it's surprising, and I just thought it was good. Not a fun movie, not an upper movie, but I'm really glad I saw it. And as much as I like some of the individual performances this year, I think his is definitely in the conversation for best actor. That was really, really good in my estimation. So here's your problem. Ryan Pollock is filling in for Elif Garris today. Ryan's our producer. So we want people to text on a scale of 1 to 23 jujubes what they give it. 23 is the maximum rating. 0 jujubes will be the lowest. You got that, Ryan? And do we have any texts in yet on this? Any ratings?
No texts so far.
No.
I'm sorry. I apologize. 18 jujubes.
18 jujubes. Okay. I'll need you, by the way, then to translate that into percentages.
I'll do the math.
So 0 to 23 jujubes expressed as a percentage, and then average them all up. And I'll need that on my desk by 9:30. No, 11:30. It's 11:13 right now. Just bit of enthusiasm I have for the movie was because it got so many nominations. So I went ahead and see. Steve, you have not seen it, correct?
I have not,
yeah.
No.
Do you have any interest in seeing it? Are you going to go watch it?
I know that I'm the only one in my house who would.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll watch it, yeah.
What about 1917? You're gonna go see
I'd like
that?
To see that, yes.
Yeah, I would too. I would too. Although the last movie I saw that this reminds me of, Dunkirk, was such a disappointment that I... You saw Dunkirk, right?
I did not.
Yeah. Is that the one I'm thinking of?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And I was underwhelmed by that.
My 23-year-old son loved 1917. And he said, the first thing he said was, it was only 2 hours. I said, really? That's what you have to say about it?
Yeah, right, right, right.
Because, you know, some of these movies are so long now.
Yeah.
That, you know, nobody could sit through these movies anymore. But that's what the first thing he said.
Mary, I feel that way about just about everything. Broadway productions.
Yeah.
You know, I felt that way about Hamilton. I thought, you could have cut that scene a little bit.
I got up from your show about 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, trust me.
Yeah, getting a little sore here.
Those of us who do 4-hour shows, that's a 3-hour show in a 4-hour bag. Those of us who do 3-hour shows, that's a 2-hour and 45-minute show. But I just wanted to share with you my enthusiasm for the movie. But again, know what you're getting into. It's as twisted as those trailers make it look. There are moments of violence. I don't think there anything you have. If you've ever seen a Quentin Tarantino movie, this is a lot less violent than a Quentin Tarantino film. Do you know how much money it cost to make Joker, by the way? What was the budget to make that movie? $55 million before marketing. But still, $55 million is all it took. We're all used to the $200 million motion pictures. This is a $55 million movie. Do you know how much money that has made so far? How much money Joker has made so far? Over $1 billion. Over $1 billion. Wow. And then 11 Oscar nominations, including Best Makeup, among other things. Director, actor, motion picture. So where are you on the... Oh, by the way, the ratings. So we were asking you to text on a scale of 1 to 23 jujubes. What do you give it? And the average so far is 19.3. I don't know why I'm rooting for this movie. But I'm happy to see that at least I'm getting a little validation. Some of you did like it about as much as I did. I gave it 20. So where are you on the city council? We'll change our news click out. Yesterday, the daily web poll question was about, do you think student debt should be canceled the way Elizabeth Warren wants to do it? And 76% of you said yes, but still 76% of you said no. But still a fourth of you said, yeah, let's just write it right off. How about that? I would not have guessed that number would have been that high. The city council is being urged to ban foam food containers, plastic forks, plastic knives and spoons, even the much-loved spork. Straws will only be available upon request. Jen Walling is on a phone line. I've got a couple of questions for her. She is the executive director of the Illinois Environmental Council. They're big supporters of this, I presume. Hi, Jen. You're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, good morning.
Did you have anything to do with the drafting of this, or did you push this along?
Yes, this has been something that's been a work in progress for over a year. working with advocates like those scientists at Shedd Aquarium, folks at Chicago Recycling Coalition, a huge group of people to put this together and respond to concerns that we've heard about litter and plastics in Chicago and all over the world.
And as much as we love our waterway here, the rivers, the river mostly, there's a lot of rivers, but the Chicago River and then the lakefront, it makes me angry to see so much plastic from a lot of restaurants and food places that just litter. And it's inevitable. It's a big city. That's the way it is. But anything we could do to just turn that spigot off or down, I'm all for. What will the restaurants use in lieu of the plastic, the styrofoam containers?
Well, there are a number of items within the ordinance. So we're looking at compostable and recyclable materials, and the city of Chicago would maintain a list of those. And those are items that would biodegrade if they became litter. And so looking at those, but this ordinance really is focused on reducing the amount of plastics that people get. I mean, you know, you go to a restaurant and you sit down, you get a drink of water, and they're going to automatically give you a straw, or they're going to automatically put utensils in your takeout bag, even though you're eating at home. Everybody's got that junk drawer full of those plastic utensils that they're never going to use. And this ordinance also addresses that, so that you can't automatically be given that waste that you're going to have to throw out.
So I can get, if I go to Portillo's, I can get a plastic fork, spoon, straw, et cetera?
Well, so for the first year, you will be able to get those, but they would have to ask you if you want them. And then after that, we phased into a requiring them to have recyclable or compostable materials, and they still would have to ask you if you wanted it. But, you know, for the first, we'll transition into something that's recyclable or compostable. So you'd go to Portillo's, you'd get a biodegradable clamshell for your hot dog, or maybe a biodegradable corn-based plastic for your silverware.
So if they have a store of those or orders committed to those, you've got 2 years almost to sort of clean out your inventory of the plastic before you transition, right?
Well, since January 1st, 2021, so about a year, I'm sure that's going to be part of negotiations is how long it takes to phase in and also, you know, which restaurant it applies to. We do have some items in there that grant full or partial waivers to dine-in restaurants that don't have the ability to wash silverware. But other cities have made this work. New York City has some thresholds for the revenue size of the business. Chicago can definitely make this work, and it's going to be such a benefit to our city.
Well, we've heard from the merchants, and they're not super-duper loving this. I don't suppose that's a surprise to you.
No, and we did reach out with groups beforehand just to give them the language, and it's going to be a discussion, and we're going to have to work together on this. We're going to have to sit down with the restaurants. We're going to have to sit down with the retailers. And I think that a lot of groups, I know there's a lot of initial reaction, like how expensive is this going to be? I think a lot of businesses are going to find that there are very cost competitive alternatives and that some of the things that they can do will actually save them money. So, you know, don't just give people a straw when you walk in. Don't just automatically give everybody these plastic utensils. What can you do as a business to reduce the amount of waste you're sending out, which in some instances can save you money, you know, and we're focused on the biggest focus for this for us is reducing the amount of waste that we put out. I mean, Chicago has an 8% recycling rate. That's not working. So starting with reduction and reducing the amount of trash we're producing is the number one goal.
Jennifer Wallings is the executive director of the Illinois Environmental Council. But so a year from now, if I go to Portillo's and I'm not going to take it at home, I want to eat it, I don't know, on the road, or eat it at home, whatever, they will give me they will give me a fork or a spoon if I want it, right? And for the first year, it could be plastic, but after a year, it has to be some sort of biodegradable utensil, correct?
That's right.
And I don't know that I care then. I mean, what do I care? Except, I mean, it's a hardship for these employers. You know, literally, some of them are saying, well, we may have to lay people off. I doubt that. I think it, but I think mm-hmm. I may end up having to pay more for that hamburger in the bag then, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is something where you're looking at costs that I think of what I have seen. There are restaurants that are already doing this, that are getting things that are the same price as those clamshells and other things that are out there. So I think there are materials out there that are cost competitive, although we'll be a really big market for this. So there's going to have to be businesses that step up and provide in terms of that. So there's that. So I think that this is something that really, you know, you're talking about clamshells that might cost just a few cents and something that might just be a cent more, you know, or the same price. So I think that when retailers and restaurants learn more about this and the items that are out there, they're going to find there are things that are very neutral, cost competitive with what they're doing right now. And you already see a lot of restaurants and other businesses transitioning in that direction anyway. And they're definitely looking at costs. So I think this is going to be something imminently doable. We just need to provide restaurants with enough time and enough resources to do it.
Says you, with all due respect, right? I mean, you make it sound like it's just order from a different company and pay one more penny, and I'll bet you they would tell me otherwise. But here again, and by the way, I suspect that if ultimately, to me, this is not a problem for them, it's a problem for me. If I want to get that chopped salad at Portillo's to go, and I do because it's fantastic, then I think I'm going to have to pay another 25 cents or something for that food, because it's going to come in containers or with utensils that are more expensive. And I think that's what we're really asking people to do is, hey, everybody, are you all cool with a 25 cent pass through that you're going to have to pay on takeout food?
Well, and I don't know how much it might be, but you're also looking at, these are restaurants that are creating litter that has to be picked up. And some of that's being picked up by volunteers, like the beach cleanups that Alliance for the Great Lakes or Friends of the Chicago River does. But some of it we pay as taxpayers for people to go pick up. So we're spending that money on picking up that litter. So it's either coming from your tax dollars or it's coming from, you know, something extra you would be paying on your food.
Well, this, I've said this, this will be the third time now, but I don't care. I'm angry about it. I live near the lake and I work near the river, and I hate to see all of the garbage, even if you're not near a body of water. Mm-hmm. But those are such lovely resources. And I think that the food industry in Chicago has turned a blind eye to how much garbage we toss out that we got from them. So they're, it might not have been them that did the littering, but by golly, that's their stuff that we've littered. And I think they need to own their share of that responsibility, and nobody seems to do anything about it. So to me, part of the problem has been the totality of it, regardless of whether or not it's biodegradable, because some of this stuff's still going to get thrown out the window, but it's there's just too much garbage, period. And when you get a fast food bag or a takeout from any restaurant in the area, there's just so much waste in there that this is how this problem, you know, that's how it's come home to roost, if you will.
Yeah, and we're talking about 22 million pounds of plastic that are going into the Great Lakes as a whole every year. And, you know, it's not just this litter at this point. These plastics break down into little pieces that end up in wildlife, but they also are ending up in our bodies. And we know that there are issues being caused, but we don't know the totality of the health issues that are being caused by these microplastics that are being caused by this trash. That's also costing us money in terms of health impacts, in terms of cleaning up our water. So there's all these other costs that we're paying from having too much trash and from littering and these plastics that you use for 3 minutes and take hundreds of years to break down.
The ordinance is proposed. It's not the law in Chicago yet, but I kind of like its chances. Scott Wagas, PAC's plastic-free water ordinance. Talking about it from the Illinois Environmental Council, the executive director, Jennifer Walling. Jennifer, thanks for your time this morning. Good luck to you all.
Thanks so much.
Have a good day. Sam Panionovic watches sports and the way people bet on them for us. Put him on the phone again today because he sent me something the other day that caught my eye. Hey, Sam, how are you?
King John, doing well. I'm still recovering from the Clemson blowout, but I'm ready to talk baseball because in this racket, there is always something you can bet. By the way, I have something else for you, too. They put out a prop on, you know, Demi Lovato's doing the national anthem at the Super Bowl, right?
Demi Lovato singing the national anthem. A prop bet on that? What's the bet?
Minute 56 seconds. That's the total elapsed time projection by some of the people. This is not in Vegas. This is in the global markets like Costa Rica, Panama, or whatever. But in some places, you can bet this. And eventually, some casinos will put it up, too. But right now, Demi Lovato's, get your stopwatch or your iPhone ready, minute 56. Start watching those YouTube tapes to prepare.
I totally have the over on that. I mean, I just think, famously, people go long for the national anthem. Who was it? Aretha Franklin went about 6 minutes at an NBA All-Star game or something like that.
I don't know. I don't know that it was 6 minutes, but I can tell you this. One time I lost money on Jennifer Hudson on the over-under. It was 204, and I think she got to free with like $1.47. And then she's holding free, like, you know, the stuff in my refrigerator started to explode. Yeah, no, she held free for probably 25 seconds and then went, and the home of the Braves, and it went over by about a second, but that's how it works sometimes.
Ryan, Aretha Franklin, national anthem, Google that, and she went really long, and it was... was it Aretha? Do you guys know the performance I'm talking about? They even made a big deal about that, how long it was. And I don't remember if it was the Super Bowl. I don't remember if it was Aretha. But it was something like that. The national anthem is usually... is it usually less than 2 minutes, Sam Panionovich?
Yeah, we've had a couple in the last few years. I think we had 157. I think we had 159. Last year's, I think, went over... was about the 2 minute mark, but that's your average number. The point is that, you know, you think the college football season's over. Guess what? Now we have a national anthem prop for the Super Bowl. And now, for all you baseball fans out there, we've got win totals, regular season only, for both the Cubs and the White Sox. And these were put up by Caesars Palace, which, of course, operates right across the border at the Horseshoe in Hammond. And the opening numbers, Chicago Cubs, 86. Chicago White Sox, 84.5. Right away, the White Sox went up to 85 because somebody in Hammond probably had a bunch of old style and went and bet it. And ever since then, there has been some sharp money on the White Sox under. And, it, you know, that number, that's a 13-win improvement from last year. That's a lot of wins. And when I see that number, I think it's a little high. Not that they can't go over it.
Yeah.
But once it went up to 85, there was some respected money the other way, betting on the under, and now that White Sox number is at 84.
Well, nobody's had a better offseason, at least in terms of press, than the White Sox. I mean, good grief. You wonder if they even have to play. Well, just give them their World Series rings now for all the publicity they got. And you're right. I think 13 games is optimistic. I'm the new bandwagon fan of the White Sox. And I would have been happy with 81. If you said 85, I would take the under on that. Where do they have them finishing in the division?
So the Twins have the highest total, 90.5. Cleveland Indians about 86. But, again, that's a team that at the deadline, if they are going to be sellers, and that's all these teams have a number. So if you have an idea or some intuition on how these teams are going to perform and then what their long-term visions are, you can actually make money in some of these markets. Like, I think the Indians at 86, if they don't play well early, April, May, into June, they're going to start trading good players in July, and you're going to have younger players, younger pitchers coming in, and that team might not get to 86. It happens. I mean, teams have bad years. Indians are second, though, at 86. White Sox at 84, and then two of the worst teams in baseball. That's why this number could still be attainable. The Royals are awful. Their win total is 65, and the lowest win total right now, the Detroit Tigers, 55.5 is the win total.
Wow. Wow.
That's a lot of losses.
That's 110 losses. Plus, you said 84 on the Sox. You mean 85 at the Sox, right?
Well, it was 85. Now it's 84. This is a fluid market. This will continue to change. This will probably move up and down throughout the offseason and the spring training, and this won't lock in until opening day. So this number is going to move.
What about the Cubs then? So at 86, is that second in the division? Where did they got them?
Yeah, behind the St. Louis Cardinals right now, 88.5. And I think some of that is built in. I'm sure you've seen some of these reports that the Cardinals are looking at possibly trading for Nolan Arenado, all-star third baseman from the Rockies. So if they get Arenado, this one could go even higher. St. Louis, 80.5, Cubs, 86, and then Milwaukee Brewers, 83.5.
Well, if the Cubs are at 86, the Cards are at 88.5. Where do they have the Brewers?
83.5.
Oh, I'm sorry, you just said that, 83.5. Don't they know about the Brewers? The Brewers, they always win at the end, and then they I don't know. I would take the over. I like Milwaukee winning more than 83.5.
That's the best part about this whole thing. People in Vegas, people that are making these numbers, they take a stance. I mean, that number is put up. Yeah, the computers have their projections, but if an odds maker or a bookmaker is bullish on somebody or some team, they have no issue, you know, taking a stance. So while you think it's 85, 86, they won almost 90 last year. Yeah, it makes sense that they should probably go over, but that just means that this person at this sports book isn't a believer. Now, Caesars is first. You're going to have other books that are going to come out. MGM will come out. Westgate will come out. Southpoint will come out. They're all going to have their own numbers. But this is how it works.
Well, what do you think, Mr. The Clemson Tigers are going to win the national championship, Sam Panayotovich?
Oh, man.
What do you think? What are your numbers for the Cubs and the Sox?
I think you asked me last Saturday, you said, what's an ideal season for the Cubs? And I said, I think an ideal season would be them winning 88, 89. I think that's their ceiling. So if their win total is 86, I think that's a pretty telling number. I would look under, honestly, with the Cub team. I mean, you look at that rotation right now, I have my concerns. Darvish is the best, in my opinion. Then you have Hendricks, Quintana, John Lester, who's on the wrong side of 35, and then you got potentially a rookie in the five hole. You have all of these players on one-year contracts. Baez, Bryant, Contreras, Schwarber, we know Rizzo's upset, and you have a rookie manager. I think that's a non-ideal situation if you're David Ross, just with all the things that could go wrong in that locker room. I mean, this window is closing. We know that. I don't know if it's all the way closed yet. But we're on the back nine here. This is, you know, hole 17 or 18. White Sox number's too high. I would not bet over there. But I think that Cub number at 86, I think it's a little too high, honestly.
Hmm. What did you make of the controversy about the Houston Astros? Do you think that they should lose their World Series championship that baseball should award it to the Dodgers?
Well, I wouldn't award it to the Dodgers, no.
Well, didn't they beat the Dodgers? Wasn't it against the Dodgers?
I don't know that the Dodgers want to be handed a trophy that they know they didn't win. I would not hand them the trophy. I think you can. It's a loaded question. It's a good question. I think that they will probably eventually have an asterisk or something like that, you know, next to the record going forward. But I don't know that you can take it away from one team and give it to another team. I mean, if they got caught cheating, then they deserve whatever the league decides. It's just, I don't know that I have all the information, because do we really know what happened? I mean, I think a lot of things are going to come out over the next couple of months. I know baseball has done their investigation, but there's a lot of things that in this case that I still don't even know and I'm not up to speed on.
Who do you think is going to win the Super Bowl then, Sam? What's the money on that with four teams remaining?
I told you this, too, 2 weeks ago. I was a big fan of Kansas City. I think they've been getting healthier over the last month. And that quarterback, he's just a freak, Patrick Mahomes. I mean, to be down 24-0 and not even flinch, and they win that game 51-31, they win by 20 points after going down by 24. You just never see that. He's just so good, and that arm is so strong, and he makes so many good throws to really talented players who make people miss. Andy Reid worries me a little bit, but I think we're going to have Kansas City, San Francisco. They're both the favorites, the two best teams for a reason. But Kansas City, I think Mahomes, if there's one player that I would put my money on at this point up to four, it'd be KC because of the quarterback.
In front of millions of Americans on Thanksgiving Day, my producer Ryan just handed this to me. Aretha Franklin transformed the national anthem. This was in 2016. Aretha Franklin transformed the national anthem into a religious experience and a football stadium into a gospel church. Her spiritual performance of the national anthem went 4 minutes and 55 seconds, the longest such recorded rendition. So that would have been on Thanksgiving Day. It was a game between the Lions and the Vikings. It was the NFL Thanksgiving Day game. And let's see, anything else I need about this here? But that's the one I'm thinking of. Any other prop bets for us, Sam?
Nothing yet. I'm going to bring in like a 30-page packet, though, because they're going to put these props up next Thursday in Vegas, and I'm going to find the best ones for you. I know they do the Gatorade color, and how many times will they show so-and-so on television. We talked about the anthem prop. There's a lot. One casino in Vegas puts out like a 35, 37-page packet. So I will pour over that, and I'll have that for you sometime next week.
Okay, that's very helpful, Sam. So just to refresh, just as we go, the Cubs, according to Vegas, win 86 games this year, finish second to the Cardinals, who win 88-plus, 88-and-a-half. The White Sox finish third in their division to the Twins and the Cleveland Indians, but they win 85 games, which would get them in the conversation for the playoffs. 85 wins, that would be, what did you say, 14 games over their performance last year. Well, 13 games better than last year. All right, Sam, nice to talk to you, my friend. Thanks for the numbers.
You too, a lot of numbers. Hope you're not too confused.
No, that works for me. You have a good day.
You too.
Sam Panayanovich. Yeah, I know. You got to be careful with all of that. And by the way, when they very quickly fall into that language, like I would give this and take that, I get lost. I can't do that. But I think you get the idea. Will the White Sox win 85 games? You can bet yes or no. 162 games in the season. Would they be 3 games better than 500? And that would be 13 more wins than they had last year, which to me sounds optimistic. So if I was betting, I would bet the under on that, but shoot, I'd love to get that bet wrong. Cubs at 86, gosh, they just can't. Of course, this is just a projection. This is just a projection. But if that's true, that means they're only 4 games better than 500, and that's too bad. So, Steve, I'm just looking at a rundown of what's supposed to happen today, but some of it should be happening about now. What's going on? Do you know?
So the House managers presented themselves to the Senate. They were on the Senate floor, and they read from the articles of impeachment, formally beginning the process. Then they left, and so they are back on the House side. What's up next is the senators will be sworn in as jurors in the case, and that's expected right around 1 o'clock. Chief Justice John Roberts will be there for that.
So this Lev Parnas guy, who is an associate of Rudy Giuliani's and who has been eager to talk, and there's some documentation about him that it's just come up in the last 24 hours. So, is it too late for that stuff?
I think some of it made it. I mean, it's not in the formal articles of impeachment, but I think it could still come up in the trial. I think that they, John, and I was not in yesterday, so I was watching from home, but I think they included some of his information. He had asked the judge if he could be allowed to share information from his phone and elsewhere with the House committee, and he was allowed to do that.
So these House managers can present that information in any form they want to the Senate
when they're making their case, yes.
I wonder if it'll be like when a Democrat or Republican president is speaking and one side is just sitting there with their arms crossed in front of them and the other side is leaning in, standing up, cheering. I wonder if half of the Senate will be enthusiastic or somehow visibly engaged and the other half will be looking at their watches.
I've heard a couple Democratic senators who were involved in the Clinton impeachment, and they kind of admitted that going in that they, you know, weren't expecting much, that this wasn't really impeachable. But they said once it started, there's a gravity to it all that sets in, and the House managers there on the Republican side did a very good job of captivating to sort of bring them in. So it did become more serious.
Boy, I'd be surprised to see that.
Well, I hope it happens.
Well, I understand that. I mean, sure, but I mean, I can just think that these Democrat representatives are going to impress the Lindsey Grahams of the world, to me, is a very tall order.
Well, it would seem so. Or Ted Cruz, or a few others. But
Mitch McConnell.
But the people who've been through it say that it is a very weighty episode, and it comes down on you once it starts, the realization of just how important it is.
Well, I hope so. I mean, even if they've made up their mind, at least pretend like you haven't. Lean in a little bit. Stay awake. Something like that.
Well, at least, you know, listen.
Well, yeah. And I mean, my goodness, I would like to think. Does this sound Pollyanna-ish? But I would like to think that they would have as open a heart and a head to what they're about to hear as is possible. I'm not expecting any great surprises, but just as an intellectual exercise, I'd like to think that they would hear what the other side has to say.
Well, and I don't know if you were listening closely to any of my newscasts today, but the GAO came out with a report, the Government Accountability Office, yeah, which is the nonpartisan watchdog, that said the Trump administration broke the law when they did not come through with this aid.
For a relatively small portion of the total amount that the Ukraine was expecting. There's a vast sum of money. What we're talking about is just a small portion of that.
I think what the copy I'm reading was more than $200 million in aid.
Yeah, and I thought, I think the number I heard too. Maybe I'm misrepresenting the numbers then. I thought that was not as much of it as I thought it was going to be. I suppose you could argue that if it's 25 cents, the point is the principle. You should not have done that.
Well, it's just kind of weird that on the eve of the impeachment that this office comes out or, you know, adds fuel to the fire that says that it's their opinion that the administration broke the law.
Yeah, but so here's the other thing that's happened in the last, I don't know, month, year, few years. I wonder if that would impress our listeners. I wonder if that would impress the senators. I think every time somebody comes up with one set of facts, somebody else looks for an alternative set of facts, or they question the impartiality of the presenters.
This is the GAO, so it is an independent group set. Well, let me finish. Set to report to the Congress, and it's the sort of thing that when the independent GAO comes up with information that congressmen like, they talk about how weighty and important it is.
Exactly.
And when they don't, they talk about how biased it is.
We have ethics watchdogs in Illinois, and they're coming up with stuff left and right about how Mike Madigan has operated, what the previous governor does, what this governor is doing, and they don't seem to care. I think that's too bad. The managers are expected, it says here, to arrive for the reading at noon, and then Chief Justice Roberts, and now it's starting to feel like a real show, is expected around 2 p.m.
Once the robes show up.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's Eastern time you're reading.
Okay, 1 o'clock, so right, in an hour.
So the House managers were there at 11 o'clock our time.
Got it. Thank you. I see what you're saying. The oath taking and book signing will follow. So it'll be a little after 1 o'clock. And then when do they actually...
Wait, it's a book signing too?
A reading and book signing. It says they're calling it a book signing, an oath taking and book signing.
By the way, the Republicans, I don't know if you took a cue from the Republicans or they took one from you, but they're really making a big deal out of this Nancy Pelosi
penalty. Thank you. I'm 100% with them. When Nancy Pelosi was signing the articles of impeachment, she used several pens so as to hand them out like souvenirs. Everything that the Democrats want you to think this is, that is not. That is all for show. That's all for... Finish that sentence. If this is grave and serious and you really have the facts behind you, stop end zone dancing or celebrating. Just do your job. Just do your job. I wonder what one of those pens would go for on eBay right now. The New York Times congressional team, and just reading from their reporting here, by Senate rules, once Chief Justice Roberts is sworn in, a summons is to be issued to the president, who will have the opportunity to address the charges laid out in the articles of impeachment. He is not expected to appear. Steve, last question. Do you know when then will they actually start to ask, make their case? When will they present on the Senate floor?
Well, I didn't hear what you just read, but the trial's supposed to start, they think, next Tuesday.
Not till Tuesday.
Right.
Okay. Fair enough.